Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Alex L., and I write books for a living. The Hey Girl podcast was created with sisterhood and storytelling in mind. Hey Girl.
Hey Girl.
Hey Girl.
Hey Girl.
Join us as we journey through sharing together. Hey Girl.
Hey Girl.
Hi Rachel, it's so nice to have you today. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well, too. I'm excited to get to chat with you about your new book, your best-selling book, Do Better, and self-care and community care and everything else in between. But before we get started, please let the Hey Girl listeners know who you are and what you do.
Cool. I'm so excited to be here and be sharing virtual space with you. My name is Rachel Ricketts. I am a queer, multiracial Black woman, a racial justice educator, disruptor, spiritual activist, healer, and author of Do Better, Spiritual Activism for Fighting and Healing from White Supremacy.
So much power in that encapsulated bio. I want to start with your book, Do Better, and then we'll kind of work our way through your spiritual activism and you being a true visionary and healer in this work of racial justice. So tell us why you wrote Do Better and what you want the world to know about this book.
I wrote this book because I think it's really vital for us to be doing the work of dismantling systems of oppression from the inside out in an embodied, heart-centered way that ensures we are rooted in ourselves, in our own bodies, in our interconnectedness as beings and our connectedness with nature, animal beings, the planet, the universe, spirit, higher source. So I think that this work of tending to white supremacy and racial injustice, which for me is always intersectional, we can't end one form of oppression without ending all. So when I talk about dismantling white supremacy, I'm also talking about dismantling classism and colorism and transphobia, homophobia, ableism, capitalism, you name it. And this is the book I felt that I needed to read because I haven't seen a lot of the work out there that's really supporting us in doing this in a rooted, spiritually minded, embodied way. Each chapter of the book has a soul care offering at the end of the chapter to really support all of us in doing this work from the inside out and really facing our shadows, because this work is grief work, this work is trauma work. Justice is actually about healing, and we can't just learn or educate our way to justice. It requires action, it requires us doing the inner work of facing our shadow, facing our wounded inner child, facing our trauma so that we can reveal, so that we can heal. And so that's the core of why I wrote the book. It was also me being a conduit for myself. It was a real act of catharsis because the book is really rooted in my personal narrative and the experiences that I've had as a queer, multiracial Black woman navigating a white supremacist, heteropatriarchal world. And I wrote this as a conduit for all of my ancestors who never had the opportunity to be able to speak their truth or dive into this realm of healing because it wasn't sufficiently safe for them to.
How are you in doing this work, filling up your cup and taking care of yourself so that you can show up full and aligned and intentional as an educator and a teacher and a giver?
For me, I mean, so all the exercises that I share in the book are all exercises that I partake in. That's how I know they work. That's how I know they can be so helpful to support ourselves so that we can support others. It's not possible for us to show up to care for the collective if we are not caring for ourselves. So a lot of it is culturally appreciative, culturally honoring spiritual offerings. So breath work and energy work and meditation, those are all some of the soul care offerings that I am trained in and lead throughout the book and that I absolutely partake in myself. And then community care is a huge piece of the work that is required, like absolutely necessary for me. I couldn't do the work I do out in the world to hold space in this way if I didn't have a community of folks, predominantly other Black women and femmes, who support me and help lift me up so that I can do that work. Another huge part of the soul care that I partake in is rest, especially as a Black woman, to unplug from the matrix of white supremacist capitalism is an act of resistance, and really diving into the work of Trisha Hersey, the Nat Ministry, around embodying rest and understanding that there's various forms of rest, and that rest is absolutely an act of resistance. It's also a practice. Right. So I really fail at it all the time, but I fail forward, I hope, you know, that's the goal.
What do you think your book is offering folks who are reading it, specifically white women? And what do you want white women to really take away and embody from this work?
So I'm very explicit in the book. It's written to white women, especially cis white women, but it is for Black, Indigenous, and people of color, specifically queer and trans, Black and Indigenous women and femmes. And so I wrote it, it's a very nuanced audience or way of writing, was not easy, but it became very clear to me very quickly that I had to write this book to white women, and especially cis white women, because they need to be called into this work in this way the most, because they have the hardest time understanding their role as an oppressed oppressor, meaning they very often get stuck in the fact that they are oppressed by heteropatriarchy, and they are, all women and femmes are, and other marginalized genders are. And at the same time, by virtue of being white, they oppress all Black, Indigenous, and people of color. That's how white supremacy works. It doesn't need to be intentional, it doesn't need to be conscious. Most of the times, it's not intentional or conscious, which is exactly why we need to do the inner work. Because 75% of the way we're operating is below our level of consciousness or awareness. So it was very imperative to me that this book was written to them, to call them into this healing work, to their own healing work, so that they have more capacity to fulsomely expand their discomfort, because white women and femmes and non-binary folks are often very conditioned to not have to expand their discomfort. And the minute they feel discomfort, they get defensive and shift, and we can't move forward. So I want them to take away their role as oppressed oppressors. We are all oppressed oppressors. Like, I am a queer multiracial Black woman, and because of those identities, I am oppressed. And I am light-skinned, I am cisgender, I'm in a hetero-passing marriage, I'm non-disabled, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I have power and privilege, and I don't have power and privilege, depending on the identity in question. And so I want white women to really have an understanding of their role in white supremacy, and that they are violent in the same way that men and masculine folks, not in the same way, but that they are violent as men and masculine folks are, and that they absolutely benefit from and perpetuate white supremacy and absolutely have work to do. I also really wanted them to have an understanding of what the actual lived consequences of their actions and white supremacy are. And so that's where my story comes into play. All of the chapters are very much rooted in my own personal experiences and stories. And that's also how I ensured that this book was for Black, Indigenous, and people of color, because it's for our well-being and for our liberation and for our healing. But we can't be fully healed or liberated or well until these systems of harm, these massive global systems of oppression, are dismantled. And that requires the folks who benefit from and perpetuate them to dismantle the systems in order for that to occur. None of us can be well until all of us are well. And so I wanted also white folks to read a book that was very, very intentionally and very clearly for Black, Indigenous, and people of color, and yet written to them. I don't know if there is another book that does that.
Where do you find joy these days?
Nature is always a joy for me. You know, putting my bare feet on the grass, which I'm so excited about spring, so I can do that again, and rooting into the earth. I'm privileged enough to live in a really nature-abundant area of the world, and so I see a lot of eagles flying by and, like, different birds, and there's, you know, I have access to the ocean and a lot of trees, and I was very intentional about, you know, locating my myself in this space because it's so nourishing for me to be able to reconnect to the land, to Indigenous wisdom, to Indigenous and ancestral ways of being, to the moon, the cycles of the moon, the cycles of the season. So that brings me joy. Tending to my inner child. So doing the things that I just love doing as a kid, dancing around my room. I'm starting singing lessons next week, which I'm very excited about.
Oh, that's very fun.
Yes. Doing the things that support my rest, right? Not just sleep, but just like being off of a screen in these pandemic streets brings me joy because everything I do is on a screen. And connecting with folks brings me great joy.
What do you want your mom's spirit, how do you connect rather with your mom's spirit in the work that you do and how you show up for those in your community with an ancestor out of her?
Yeah, all the work I do is in her honor, really. You know, I've been through some really heinous experiences and I talk about a lot of them in the book, but honestly, it's the tip of the iceberg. There's so many more. And as the only child of a single mother, you know, we moved through the world together. We were a unit in many ways. And then she was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis when I was 13. And so I became a caregiver very young and very quickly. And I saw the ways in which these systems of harm and oppression manifested as physical trauma, as dis-ease in her body, as I talk about in the book. And a lot of that for me really rooted in her not feeling sufficiently safe and not being sufficiently safe to speak her truth. And so I speak my truth because she couldn't. So all of the work I do really, like being such a mouthpiece as I am, really is rooted in her fire. You know, there was a period in 2020 where I was, I think even before, I was so angry. I was so angry. And I talk about anger in the book a lot because anger gets a bad rap and I think that it doesn't need to. Like what we do with that anger is what matters. But actually the act of being angry doesn't need to be demonized or vilified. Anger can be an incredibly useful tool for change and for our own personal healing around like when a boundary has been crossed and an injustice has occurred. But I was so angry and I knew that anger wasn't mine. I could feel it was like her anger and my ancestors' anger. And so all of that got fueled into the book. Like the first chapter of the book is called My Love Includes Anger. And so I communed with her. I was a conduit as I wrote this book, really, you know, for and through my ancestors, her being the primary one. And so I just keep her in mind at all times. And also I have an altar where I'm like constantly communing with them and, you know, nourishing them and receiving and giving. So I feel like my mother is very much alive. I actually had a dream the other night where we were walking down the street and I was a kid and she was holding my hand and we were walking down the street. And she didn't hold my hand a lot when I was little, which was a result of her own drama, but she was well. Like she was totally well, like mentally well, spiritually well, emotionally well, physically well. And I just don't have a lot of memories of her being wholesomely well. And I do this work because we all deserve to be wholesomely well, especially those of us who have been most oppressed and most marginalized, which is causing us to be so unwell.
It's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. I know that's tender and the work you're doing is celebrated and necessary. So just from my heart to yours, I see you and I appreciate everything you're doing in this world and in this life. It is so necessary.
Thank you so much.
So before we go, I have one last question, which is if you were mentoring your younger self, what would you teach her and how would you guide her?
I love this question because I'm doing this work now.
Yeah. Same.
I was really sad last night and I literally put my hand over my heart and was like, what do you need? And I just imagined my little self. I would give her room to be a child and to play because she didn't get to be, you know, growing up in these systems of harm and oppression. She had to grow up quite quickly. And so she didn't just get to be free and to paint and draw and dance and, you know, roll in the mud and just be silly and laugh. So I have friends of my mom who told me, you know, after she died, like, you were a really serious kid. And it just made me so sad because that's, you know, I don't want to hear about kids being serious. You know, I want kids to be able to be joyful and jovial and play and be children. And I think a lot of us weren't able to do that. So that would be the route. I would just play with her. And that is work that I'm doing now, really, in a lot of my meditations, just make sure she knows she's being cared for and that she gets to play now.
Thanks for listening to the show today. Please rate, subscribe, and review. Also, feel free to share with a friend.
We love having our community grow. Music is by DC's own Kokai.
The Hey Girl podcast is produced by Wayne Bertram and me, Alex L.